May it please the Court, Mervyn Mossbacher on behalf of the petitioner Muhammad Siddiqui. And I just want to give a little background on the how this case came into being. Mr. Siddiqui is a native of Pakistan, a young man who came to this country in 1998. In Pakistan, he was a member of a minority political movement or party called MQM. That has been persecuted, and its members have been persecuted by the government of Pakistan. And further, the society in which Mr. Siddiqui was raised, there is not much trust of government, and certainly not a dialogue between citizens and government that encourages truth-telling.
But Mr. Mossbacher, this is an endemic problem, of course, in the immigration system, and that issue is not unique to Pakistan, for sure. But once we get to the point of the then INS investigation revealing the extent of the lies, essentially, that Mr. Siddiqui had presented, the United States is entitled, is it not, to have a law that says those people who have lied are not entitled to adjust their status to live in the United States permanently. Have to tolerate that, do we?
Certainly Congress is entitled to pass a law.
And it's done so, hasn't
it? And enforce it.
and enforce the law.
Right.
But also, there are certain parameters under which that law should be enforced, and I don't believe those parameters were followed by the immigration court, the immigration judge in this case. The Board of Immigration Appeals has basically laid out those parameters.
Awfully hard to see how this case comes even close to the line, because after your client was caught dead to rights, lying on the central part of his application, he then fessed up and said, "You're right, I'm lying, but please give me asylum anyway."
Well, Your Honor, basically,
this isn't anywhere near the border.
Well, I believe that he fessed up originally in an interview with the service on the I-130 petition filed by his American citizen wife. And basically the reason he fessed up is he was influenced by his wife to tell the truth to the officer. And the officer made a finding based on that.
Whoa. You're digging an even deeper hole. You're saying now, as I hear it, my client didn't want to tell the truth. He really wanted to continue lying, but his wife told him he should, for once, follow the law. That's not, I assume, what you really think will promote your client's case.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that does promote my client's case.
Oh, dear.
Because this was outside of the immigration court process. He admitted to the service that there were some embellishments in the original petition.
But it's
asylum.
Worse than embellishments. I mean, the furthest that I could myself get with you is to imagine, you know, he fesses up, he repents, you know, he's willing to start from scratch. But at that point, there's not very much left in this record that counts as persecution. This Court's seen plenty of MQM cases, but there's not too much left. And his original asylum application fits to a T the definition of frivolous in the regulation 208.20. Any of its material elements is deliberately fabricated. It was. And, you know, maybe we should have a law that gives people second or third or fourth chances, but I don't see that that's the current state of the law. So when the BIA decides to enforce it, I don't really see where he can avoid that.
Well, I believe that the immigration judge did not follow the process that was required under regulation.
What was the immigration judge supposed to do?
Well, he was supposed to give Mr. Siddiqui notice of his intent to find him, that this was a frivolous application, and give him an opportunity to respond and to explain.
But assuming for the sake of argument that the immigration judge fell down in that task, I'm not sure if I'd go there, but suppose he did. you normally have to find prejudice from that kind of procedural misstep, and it's difficult, given Mr. Siddiqui's admissions, given everything else in this record, to see what difference any of that makes here. Where's the prejudice? What would he have said if the immigration judge had done all of the things that you want him to have done?
Your Honor, I believe it would have given the judge a context and also given Mr. Siddiqui an opportunity to talk about the basis for the claim of persecution.
But does the judge have the discretion to disregard the definition of frivolousness in the regulations?
The judge has the discretion to make a determination as to whether what constituted the activity in this case fits the definition of frivolousness. And before making
and
that
it's
determination...
Not a, you think there's an actual way he could have said this was not a material element that was deliberately fabricated?
Yes, I believe there is a way he could have said that if he had waited to hear an explanation from Mr. Siddiqui.
And what's Mr. Siddiqui's best explanation, as I'm understanding you this morning, is that lots of people don't trust government in Pakistan, so people say whatever it is they think they need to say?
Well, that will be part of the explanation, Your Honor. It would also involve what his particular situation was when he came to the United States.
Okay.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Richard Sanfordino for the respondent. There are a number of problems with this petition, and we want to first touch on a jurisdictional issue, which petitioner has not raised, but we think is there. It tends to somewhat get lost in the more interesting aspect of the false claim. Petitioner sought a continuance from the immigration judge at this point because he was seeking to adjust his status. The immigration judge found that even if the frivolous finding, the immigration judge pointed out, saying even if the frivolous finding would not legally stand, the immigration judge still denied it in his discretion because of the number of falsehoods that had been proffered in the first place. As we argued in our brief, this Court's decision in Ali suggests that the Court lacks jurisdiction over that aspect of the petition for review. Petitioner has been silent as to that, both as to the case and as to the issue. So we would suggest, at least as to that portion of the petition for review, there is no jurisdiction. Turning to the false asylum claim, petitioner gave numerous absolute falsehoods. He didn't accidentally file a false autopsy report of his non-existent son. He didn't accidentally file a false claim about his wife's death certificate. These are absolute falsehoods that were properly considered by the immigration judge, and we would reject petitioner's assertion that the immigration judge didn't follow proper procedures. The record has a very long colloquy between the immigration judge and petitioner when he's questioned by petitioner's counsel and the government and the immigration judge about what aspects are true, what are false. At any point during that, petitioner could have said, all right, I did all this because I didn't trust the government. I don't trust governments in general. He didn't do that. We'd also point out that under the board's published decision in YL, that one of the requirements is that the person who is given the falsehoods be given the opportunity to explain their acts. But there's an exception in the published decision of the board that says except where it's so blatant that it could not be missed. We'd suggest that this is such a case when petitioner has outright lied throughout his aspect of his claim. Quickly, I just want to turn to the motion to remand that was filed, I believe, on Friday or Thursday with this court. There's no basis whatsoever for this court to remand the record. We would also point out that this is simply an end run around the motion to reopening statutes that are within the INA. What petitioner sought and received was a classification. He was classified as the spouse of a United States citizen, which he still is. The frivolous finding didn't act as a divorce decree. He's still the spouse of a citizen.
I have to say, Mr. Sanfordino, not for the first time, though, looking at this history, it strikes me that an enormous amount of wasted motion happens within the Department of Homeland Security and the Executive Office of Immigration Review, because it looks like somebody in USCIS was toiling away on the I-130 petition, which gets granted May 16, 2008. But if he's permanently barred from living in the United States, whether they process that petition or not, similarly has no effect on whether he's married to his wife. If she wants to move to Pakistan with him, she can move to Pakistan with him, assuming the Pakistani government is amenable to that arrangement.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And our office did contact the DHS and try and get the left hand and right hand to communicate on this. But we would point out the position of the DHS from its USCIS wing, as opposed to the enforcement wing, is that when
we're never speaking to you. I mean, honestly.
But their position is that someone who is seeking a classification, it's not a benefit per se. Is that if they have $1,000 they want to spend and go into the USCIS and say, declare me to be the spouse of a citizen, that they're required to act on it. Now, there's the other aspect of this is we suggest a much easier case in terms of frivolousness, but there could, in theory, be a case where maybe an immigration judge finds someone frivolous. It's a closer case. The USCIS would not process that, but then perhaps that ruling is overturned, and then the application has gone nowhere. Maybe someone's adversely credible, but that wouldn't necessarily prevent them from adjusting. So there's no easy answer on that. It's made worse, we actually must confess, because at one point, record pages 551 and 552 include a notice of intent to deny the visa. But that was because they didn't believe the marriage was genuine. And one of the reasons they didn't believe the marriage was genuine was because practically nothing about the asylum claim was genuine. But somewhere along the way, they've obviously convinced USCIS that it's a valid, bona fide marriage. But again, as we suggested in our opposition to the motion to remand, that simply doesn't affect whether or not he can adjust his status. With that, we ask the petition be dismissed in part, denied in part, and the motion to remand be denied.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Mosbacher?
I just want to touch briefly on the
one is on the jurisdictional question of the denial of the motion for continuance. I believe that counsel for the government has cited Ali versus Gonzalez as a proposition that there is no jurisdiction for this court. But this court also had the decision of Subhan versus Ashcroft, 333 Fed 3rd 591, wherein it did find that under certain circumstances where the immigration judge basically cuts off the inquiry, that you would have jurisdiction and motion for continuance. And in this case, the immigration judge, when he did make the ruling on the motion for continuance, specifically stated as the basis the frivolous claim and that he was barred from any relief. And we would contend that that cut off the inquiry. He wasn't making a determination on the adjustment of status on its own, which he would have the discretion to do so. Concerning the motion to remand, the service certainly did have all of the facts in the immigration court case before it when it made the decision to grant the I-130 petition for an alien relative. They interviewed both Mr. Siddiqui and his wife extensively before making that decision. And I believe that that decision constitutes, in essence, a waiver by the agency. Whether the left hand knows what the right hand is doing or not, the waiver of the agency.
See how the agency can waive any of this. There's a statute. Where does the agency get the authority to say, well, you know, we're just waiving this statute? It's a permanent bar on eligibility. Is there some grant of authority to the agency to waive this statute?
Well, it's certainly there is a grant of authority to the court to reconsider and the immigration judge to reconsider the issue, and the agency, I believe, can reconsider the issue as well.
If you would answer my question, I would appreciate it. You say that by dealing with this visa application, the agency has, quote, waived the statute, and I'm looking for authority for the agency to say, well, we just won't apply this permanent eligibility bar. Is there any such authority? The Attorney General actually has authority to parole people into the United States in violation, in what would otherwise be a violation of the statute. Are you relying on the Attorney General's parole authority?
Well, we're relying on the Attorney General's authority, as he's expressed in memorandum, to the field offices that they have discretion to take extraordinary measures in cases before them. And they list cases in which they can do that. This waiver of a frivolous claim is not one of the cases, but it's not an exclusive list that the Attorney General published to his field officers.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.